Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line, Todd Rosiak, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. As we speak, he is still in Pittsburgh after he was there to watch the Brewers split a four-game series with the Pirates. They went on Sunday 2-0 to wrap it up, and now the Brewers and Todd presumably head home for a homestand starting on Monday against the Chicago Cubs, and these Pittsburgh Pirates will be right back in their lives again at American Family Field. When we're done talking to Todd, I have an interview with Brewers outfielder Hunter Renfro. He's been on the injured list, just went on the injured list late last week. Actually, as I was talking to him, he was already hurt. Didn't even know it. He didn't know he was going on the IL, so it didn't come up. We didn't talk about it. That was during the last homestand. So forgive the lack of mention of that, but that'll be coming up after we chat here. Todd, my understanding is the Furries convention is going on in Pittsburgh yet again. Andrew McCutchen's tweet alerting us to that fact. So are you surrounded by furries? Is that what's happening right now?
I have literally not seen one furry the entire time I've been here, and it's just because I'm staying on the other side of the river, right across from the ballpark. So
got it.
Unfortunately, I have not been able to partake. I'm sure it's quite a scene, but I've heard all the stories, you know, heard the Euchre stories and all that from back in the day, and I've been told that there's been some interesting sightseeing to do around the downtown area. So,
but they're not by the ballpark. They stay away from the ballpark. That's interesting. I would think the furries might like sports. I don't know.
I have not. The other thing too about Pittsburgh now is the Clemente Bridge, so the one that you see off in the distance in the outfield, that's been closed for quite some time because they're painting it and kind of like redoing it. So
okay.
It cuts off a really easy route between this area and the downtown area, and you've got to walk, you know, several more blocks one way or the other to get across the river. So I think that might discourage some people too from making this stuff. Yeah.
All right, so Todd Rosiak has steered clear of the furries, but what he did see on Sunday was Brandon Woodruff's second start. He made two of them this week, returning from injury. The Brewers did have some bad injury news this week, but also a lot of guys who came back, and Woodruff was at the top of that list. He had a great outing in Tampa Bay. He closes the week a great outing in Pittsburgh, and probably, I mean, I don't even know if the Brewers could have imagined a more encouraging first two starts back after his initially hurting his ankle, but then about with Raynaud's syndrome, which was limiting his feeling in his fingertips. But he looked awesome. Hasn't walked a batter in two starts. Brewers won both of those games. I guess I'm just curious your thoughts on his performance and what people are saying about it in the aftermath. I mean, I can't imagine there's anything but great optimism and encouragement with how things have gone with Brandon Woodruff.
Yeah, it was interesting in the clubhouse. There's been no surprise about how strong he's looked coming off the injured list. Brandon Woodruff himself was a little shocked when we told him that he hadn't walked anybody in his two starts. He didn't know that. Chris Hook maybe had the best comment of all, or the best insight of all, in saying that basically, this is the Brandon Woodruff that they were expecting coming out of spring training. The Woody that was the all-star, the Woody that was fifth in the Cy Young balloting last year, and positing that maybe that the time on the injured list was something of a reset for him. And Woodruff himself kind of agreed with that theory. It allowed him to get as healthy as he could. He's still kind of dealing with that finger, but clearly it's not really having an effect on him at this point. But, you know, he's able to clean up some things mechanically. Kurt Hoag wrote a story about that coming off of the previous start in Tampa and some minor tweak that he and Chris Hook had employed. So definitely good timing, winning the first and last games of this road trip. Earning the Brewers a winning road trip against Tampa and Pittsburgh, but then also, kind of hitting his stride when the Brewers lose yet another starter to injury. This time, Adrian Houser, who went down in the first game on Thursday with what we learned later was a elbow flexor strain. Fortunately for Houser and the Brewers, it's not considered a serious thing, but he's going to be out for several weeks while that heals up. And then, I'm guessing he'll probably have to do some, maybe a few minor league rehab starts to kind of get back up to speed before he returns.
Yes, the injury bug giveth and the injury bug taketh. The Brewers got guys like Trevor Gott back, Yandel Gustave, Aaron Ashby came back right on schedule, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. We'll talk about Ashby in a second, but Adrian Hauser leaving his start this week and going on the IL, going right back to Milwaukee, much like the last time we saw someone leave with, you know, forearm tightness, that being Ashby. Like it felt very ominous. Felt like, okay, this has the potential to be a very serious long-term injury, and then it doesn't, at least in the initial tests and the initial analysis, doesn't appear to be that that's the case. Ashby has struggled this year pretty badly, and I wonder if he's just not right overall. You know, we've talked about it a little bit, really since his arbitration case went the way of the Brewers, he just hasn't been as sharp, and I know some people are pointed to that as a possible endpoint, but it just seems overall we haven't seen the Adrian Hauser that we saw last year, and I don't know if him having to carry the extra load because guys like Woodruff and Freddie Peralta had gotten hurt maybe contributed to that, maybe contributed to him just not, you know, pitching through pain a little bit or pitching through discomfort, or if this is a brand new separate thing that just popped up. I don't know what, I know you've had the chance to talk to him a little bit and talk to the Brewers since. So what are some of the things that are being said about the Adrian Hauser injury?
Just that it's a strain. Like I said before, flexor strain. There wasn't really a lot of concern about it. I think the kind of the general consensus is that he dodged a bullet. Whenever you hear flexor, whenever you hear forearm, any of those things for a pitcher, usually the antennae go up and you start thinking worst case scenario right away. Especially with a guy like Adrian Hauser who had Tommy John surgery in 2016. But all indications are that it's something that will go away over time and with rest. So it'll be probably about 2 weeks, we were told, before he'll be able to start throwing again. And then just kind of move forward from there. So certainly, on the injured list, the Brewers will have to figure out what to do to replace him in the rotation in the meantime. But, you know, you would look at and you would certainly figure on a return somewhere fairly early in the second half, after the All-Star break, I would think.
Yeah, that would certainly make sense. And Ashby comes back from his injury, has the minimum amount of time on the IL, which is encouraging. I feel like his last couple starts, even before the injury, a little bit of a mixed bag. He still looks electric at times and strikes out, you know, stack strikeouts, but then also is prone to just not having pinpoint command and giving up a little bit sometimes in bunches. I my personal working theory is that when we get to the playoffs, Ashby is going to be a reliever and maybe also Adrian Hauser. I don't know if I assign everybody to a relief role, maybe there aren't enough starters to get through the postseason, but Ashby just has sort of that vibe to me as a guy who could go three innings like an Andrew Miller type or pick a dominant sort of multi-inning lefty. But starting is kind of testing his limits a little bit, and I'm sure that's where the Brewers want him and where his long-term projection is. Is still as a starting pitcher. And they're going to need him as a starter right now because, again, Hauser's out. So they are, again, back down to five healthy starting pitchers. So it's not that I think that's where he's going now or anything. But what do you think of that? Do you think that's maybe ultimately his destination for at least this season and that's what he's shown? Or do you think he's still working out the kinks and has the potential to be a 5-6-inning starter and a guy who's going to be helping this team in that capacity as we get toward the home stretch?
Yeah, I definitely think that the Brewers see him as a starter long-term. We asked Craig Counsell about that a few days ago, if there was the potential for him to maybe bounce back and forth like he was earlier in the season as the season progresses. And he didn't really dismiss that out of hand. So, but I think that's going to be a ways down the pike. You know, they definitely need him in the rotation right now. And he's done well in spurts. He's had a couple, you know, he had that 12 strikeout start, and then he had a 9 strikeout start right after that. But then he gets into these bouts of not necessarily wildness, but just he falls behind too frequently in the counts, and then it makes him that much more hittable. And that's what happened to him in his start here the other night in Pittsburgh. So the potential is still there. The talent is still there. Obviously, the results have not been to this point. And he did well earlier in the season, bouncing back and forth. So there is basis there. There is a foundation there for if and when the Brewers decide to put him back into that role. He has done it with with some confidence and with some success. So we'll see. But for right now, I think the big takeaway pitching wise is just the fact that Brandon Woodruff looks like the Brandon Woodruff of old, and Corbin Burns taking a no-hitter into the sixth inning despite pitching probably one of his worst games of the season. Incredibly enough, he pretty much spit on his whole no-hit bid the other night, based off of just how bad his command was, and he had no control of his cutter. So it's pretty remarkable a guy can be that dissatisfied with a start and still have taken a no-hitter into the sixth inning. It was pretty entertaining to hear him talk about that, and of course the mad dash off the field after catching that pop-up too, which you wrote about the other day.
Love it.
So it was an interesting series here for sure in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, 19 runs that the Brewers scored in support of a game where Corbin Burns started. So that it hasn't always been the case that he's gotten the run support, but holy smokes, Brewers came out swinging a 7-run inning and an 8-run inning. We'll talk more about that in a minute. What is the rotation going forward? Is it just the five guys? You've got Burns and Woodruff. You've got Eric Lauer. And then you've got Aaron Ashby and Jason Alexander, I suppose, is your five guy. And then I haven't done the math on this. Do the off days line up now where the Brewers can afford to get away with five guys through the All-Star break, or is somebody else going to be making some starts? Maybe an Ethan Small, I don't know.
Yeah, we asked about that too, and as he usually is, Craig Counsell does not like to look past that day's game, so he didn't really give us much of an indication. Jason Alexander being on hand certainly gives them an option, and he's definitely been better as a starter than he has as a reliever to this point. The body of work is not huge, but he's done surprisingly well in his role as an injury replacement as a starter. You got Chichi Gonzalez still on the staff as well. He had three scoreless innings in relief last night, Saturday night too. So he could be another possibility as well. So they've got guys on hand that could really kind of get them through the lurch. The Ethan Small thing, I'm not really sure that that's gonna play. He's been a little bit up and down since his time up, the start that he made with the Brewers. Again, that's not to, diminish anything he might do in the future, because he's certainly in the plans for the Brewers. But I would tend to think that what they have on hand right now is what they'll utilize, whether it be Alexander or Chi-Chi.
Pretty surprised. If you had told me Jason Alexander or Chichi Gonzalez would still be on the, even on this roster as long as they have, I might be surprised. But you can't deny that they've been effective at times, especially, like you said, Alexander starting and Gonzalez, whenever called upon, he's not blowing anybody away. He's walking a little bit of a tightrope, but he's effective. And those 3 innings, it's easy to forget about them because they come in the context of a blowout that the Brewers were going to win regardless of circumstance. But, it's always good to have somebody soak up that many innings. And that's something that turning some heads for the Brewers. That's looked like a pretty good addition thus far. One position that I guess would be a little concerning right now is center field, and we've talked about that already. Like, the Brewers are presumably going to try to address that right before the trade deadline, which is which is less than a month away. We're pretty much 1 month out right now. That early August date is going to be coming soon. And right now their starting center fielder is Jonathan Davis, because Tyrone Taylor took a ball off the head, jumping to try to make a play on Thursday. He did play on Friday, but wound up going on the 7-day concussion injured list. So he is out for a short period of time. I'm sure the Brewers hope he's back very quickly, but as of right now, there's Jonathan Davis. I suppose Jace Peterson can play center field. Maybe, I don't know, a few innings here or there for, I don't know, Christian Yelich. Like, they don't have an obvious next guy up in center field. And Jonathan Davis is a good defensive player, but obviously not a guy you want to rely upon offensively. So what are they going to do? Is there a roster move to be made, or is this just, they're just going to try to patch it together for a week?
No, I mean, I don't even think it'll be a week. Talked to Tyrone Taylor after the game today, and he said his symptoms are already subsiding. So, barring any dramatic downturn in his health, he would project to be back during this next homestand. So I think the Brewers will just ride it out with Jonathan Davis in center, and then they're going to have to use Jace Peterson in right. So they're definitely shorthanded in the outfield, but kind of is what it is right now. And with the injuries, it's just more, standard operating procedure, just next man up. It's what they've been doing all season. And while Jonathan Davis hasn't exactly been tearing it up with the bat, you at least know you're going to have a solid glove out there, and guy that can make some great plays, as obviously he did in Tampa, crashing into the wall. So, best case scenario, Tyrone Taylor's back in there toward the end of this this coming week, and you're at full strength for what you have for this at this point in time. There's not really much in the minor leagues, in the upper levels of the minor leagues, in the outfield, that they can really do anything internally that's going to improve them a bunch. So, like you mentioned earlier, I would expect David Stearns is doing his due diligence, looking around and seeing what's available out there. We talked about that last week on the podcast too, but I've not seen any other rumors or heard any other whispers since then about that. We'll just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Christian Yelich has been doing really well at leadoff. He had another hit on Sunday, so he's up to a 12-game hitting streak. It's been, I want to say, 22 games batting leadoff for the Brewers, and looking very good, looking very much very comfortable. What we still don't see a lot of is power, that pull power. But of course, then on Saturday, he absolutely destroys a ball and pulls it way out of the park for a home run. So we saw a flash of that as well. I feel like if you add that piece, if you add a little bit more of that, then Christian Yelich is again hovering toward a point where we can say he's back to a very effective, truly like potential all-star caliber player. You know, like he's not going to be an all-star this year or anything, but I'm saying his play could be approaching that threshold. He's been getting on base well over 400 in the leadoff spot. I assume we're going to see him there at the end of the year. What have people been saying about him, and do they feel like there's something that maybe has been discovered here, that we're seeing maybe a more comfortable and confident Christian Yelich?
Yeah, I think it does come down to comfort. And with that comfort has come production, and with that production has come confidence. And we actually had a really long talk with Yelich on Saturday before the game, and he just, his demeanor really struck me. He's much more relaxed. I'm sure the production has a lot to do with that. He's in a good place physically. We were talking to him about that. He's played virtually every game, for last season, the stints that he had in the IL and the worries about the back and everything, that has not been an issue at the least. So, people can knock his production and everything, but the guy's been out there literally every day and in some form or fashion, whether he's in the outfield or DHing. And the move to the leadoff spot has been great so far. He's got an OBP over 400, hit three homers in that spot, driven in, I think, 9 or 10 runs. So he's doing everything that you would want out of a leadoff hitter. And, getting his patience also plays well up there. He's a guy that will take his walks. His strikeouts have not spiked at all. And as Craig Counsell pointed out, just the terrific base runner that he is, that also gives you another weapon when you've got guys like Willy Adames and Luis Urias and Rowdy Tellez batting, in the middle of the lineup. When you've got a guy who can cut the corners, cut the bases like Christian Yelich can, that's another weapon in and of itself. So far, so good. I think the Brewers certainly are happy, and I think Christian Yelich is happy, and I would expect him to remain there for the foreseeable future until there's some other compelling reason to talk about moving him elsewhere.
Brewers added Pedro Severino to the active roster. That was the corresponding move to Tyrone Taylor going on the concussion IL. Severino is he was suspended 80 games. He's a catcher. The Brewers have two catchers. It's worth, I think, an important note worth mentioning that Severino is ineligible for postseason. So even if you thought there was a chance Omar Narvaez and Victor Caratini would be supplanted in some way, the Brewers aren't just going to cut bait with a clearly competent, both of those guys have been very, I would say, very good at worst and very good, but, is probably a better descriptor. But they're not going to cut, they need those guys in the postseason. Like, those are your two catchers. So I don't really know if we're just going to see Pedro Severino mostly, if not completely, at first base, if he's going to play at all. It's still, to me, a pretty big mystery what they do with this guy. I'm guessing they're going to see if he can hit give him a few days, see if he can hit, and then maybe make a decision at that point. I don't know. Do you have any clarity on where this goes from here?
I honestly don't think we'll see a lot of him at first base, maybe some. I think what they'll try to do is rotate him through at catcher. I think you'll see him play catcher, start behind the plate when we've got left-handed starting pitchers on the mound. You might be able to utilize the DH spot with him on occasion, but it's pretty hard to plug a guy in who's missed half the season and pull out either Omar Narvaez or Victor Caratini, both of who have been so good behind the plate. They've been carrying the weight offensively. Their combined OPS ranks in the top 10 in the major leagues among catchers. And the job that they've done defensively and calling games as well, just that familiarity is big. You can't discount that with the pitching staff. And that's something that Pedro Severino is going to have to get up to speed with as well. And that's something that takes time. He was able to get some of that taken care of during spring training, but he's going to have to kind of reacquaint himself now in the coming days and, kind of reintroduce himself. And there's some guys who he'll be catching who he's never seen before or caught before as well, who have joined the team since spring training. So it'll be interesting, kind of an interesting few weeks to watch how they actually do get him in there. But he's another bat any way you slice it, and you'll always take that. And you can, as we've seen, the Brewers are very creative when it comes to fitting guys in. So we'll just have to wait and see what Craig Counsell does and how he gets him in there.
Before we get to three up, three down, I misspoke earlier. Chichi Gonzalez's three innings that came in the 7-4 loss, not the 19-2 win. That was Trevor Kelly, who worked multiple innings in that game. So I had that a little screwed up. But the 19-2 outcome for the Milwaukee Brewers on Friday night against the Pirates, a 7-run inning, an 8-run inning. It's the first time in franchise history that the team has had 2 7-inning runs in the same game. First time any MLB team has done that since 2018. So just, I don't know, carte blanche. What moment or two sticks out? Because that's one of those games that you'll remember for a long time, I got to think.
I'm just going to go to that 8th inning feeling bad, like really feeling bad for Cam View, the Pirates pitcher who had to wear it. He threw whatever it was, 56 or 58 pitches in that 8th inning. I think he faced 11 batters before retiring one. Willy Adames hits a grand slam. It was just Tom Haudricourt and I used to always joke about batting practice when guys were in a, pitchers were getting lit up. It was pitching batting practice, and we threw out the gifts with the Gashouse Gorillas from Bugs Bunny and all that.
Yeah.
That's literally what it was. And it really got to the point where you felt bad and you're wondering, what is Derek Shelton doing? Well, how is he leaving this kid out here to take a beating? And talking to some of the Brewers after that game on Saturday morning, they also felt legitimately bad for the guy too. So from what I read from the Pirates side, Derek Shelton offered a mea culpa the next day and apologized to the kid. The kid said all the right things. So it sounds like they kind of worked things out internally, but it's very rare that you see any manager allow one pitcher to take a beating like that, no matter how bad your bullpen is depleted and what kind of situation you're in. I mean, I think you got to go multiple position players at that point after you get past about 40 pitches. So that was ugly, and that's the thing that I'll remember for a long time coming back here in the future. That was ugly to watch. And a former Lakeshore Chinook too, from what I understand.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Cam
Yeah.
Buehl with former Lakeshore Chinook. Man, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough scene. 8 runs without getting an out. That's really, really you gotta save the poor kid at that point. But we did see both teams were able to throw a position player, Van Meter for the Pirates, Mike Brasso pitching for the Brewers, getting through the ninth. Some levity, I guess, to close that down. But the Brewers with an absolute beatdown. I'm sure there are people scratching their heads right now. How do you beat a team 19-2 and then only split the series when you look at the final run differential? That's just baseball. That's the way it goes. All right, let's get into the finer points of this week. It's three up, three down. We're going to start in a obvious place. Wednesday against Tampa Bay, Jonathan Davis makes the most ridiculous catch in center field, back to the infield, diving full extension into the wall. I think it was equal parts, everybody's awestruck, stricken, and then also, they feel his pain. They assume that that's going to be like a season-ending injury or something, because it looked like he hurt himself pretty good. He did leave that game shortly after that, not immediately, but shortly after that, had some back pain, some neck pain, understandably, after like ramming his head into the outfield wall. But he's able to play later this week. I mean, he didn't sit out more than I think one extra game. So just a wild, one of the better catches you'll see, of course, this season. you know, I don't know if it'll necessarily be this thing that stands the test of time. There have been a lot of great catches. Billy McKinney had one last year that was just jaw-dropping, in my opinion. I think it was in San Diego. I don't actually remember where it was. But it was awesome, and I thought, man, that's like an all-time greatest catch in Brewers history. And I don't think anybody's talking about Billy McKinney's catch, you know, a year later. So these things tend to get forgotten in the middle of the season. But holy smokes, Jonathan Davis, you've written about his center field prowess. You've written about how he's made catches like that before, and it looks very prescient when he goes in the wall and makes just this ridiculous robbing Randy Rosarena of probably an inside-the-park home run. It was crazy.
Yeah, not to pat myself on the back, but even what's the saying? A blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. So it was just interesting that I talked to Rowdy Tellez. He's the one who alerted me to it first before I even talked to Jonathan Davis initially. And just kind of like less than a week later, it actually played out. It was almost the exact same catch. Pretty crazy how that worked out.
Yeah. All right. You got one for three up, three down?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Rowdy Tellez, went back in the record books here today. And can you tell me off the top of your head the last time Rowdy Tellez hit a single?
I can't. I actually have this written down from your reporting that it's been, what is it, not? It's the ninth. He's had nine straight extra base hits. So the 10th one, whenever that was a single.
Yeah, so it was June 17th at Cincinnati.
That was his last single. It's ridiculous.
So since that single, his hits have been double-double, homer-homer, 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 double.
That's incredible. And you had a heck of a name.
Sorry, we talked about that with him on Saturday, and he said, yeah, I mean, I've been feeling good at the plate as far as that goes. He said, you're not going to see any triples from me in that you know, span. Then I looked it up. He actually had two triples last year. He had one with the Blue Jays and one with the Brewers, which stunned me as well.
Wow. I don't even remember the Brewers one, which is shameful because I can tell you he has scored from first three times this year. I keep track of this. How did I forget about this triple?
Yeah, I don't know. Me either. I didn't remember it either. But anyway, it's just it's a pretty incredible, weird baseball statistic. He still has one more to get to. If he can manage one more extra base hit, then he'll tie the inimitable Ryan Thompson for the franchise record with 10.
That is definitely the name I wanted to mention. Like you said that in 2002, from August 22nd to September 1st, he had 10 straight extra base hits without a single. And I'm like, Ryan Thompson? I guess I do remember him. Yeah, I think I remember him very vaguely. But it's like, man, no one's gonna know who that guy is. That's a heck of a pull.
Yeah, yeah. So that's those lists are always fun to look at, with just for the names. You know, like who else has accomplished it? Sometimes it's, you know, the notables, but very often it's not. And you kind of, it takes you back down memory lane. And Ryan Thompson was on one of those really bad Brewers teams back in the day.
All right, my next one is, I'm actually going to go back to the same game I started in, the Jonathan Davis catch game. The Brewers had two home runs in that game, both, including Rowdy Tellez, both off the catwalk in Tampa Bay. Luis Arias had one as well. That's one of the more unique features of any baseball ballpark. Unique might be one word. Some people would say strange or like ugly because the catwalks at Tampa Bay aren't exactly celebrated. But the Brewers found a way to hit that catwalk a whole bunch of times. And I believe there was a third instance in that series as well where they struck one of those rings around the roof at Tropicana Field. It is an unusual place. No small feat winning both games against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay isn't maybe the dominant force they've been in years past, but still very good, still very much trending toward a playoff spot. So the two wins there, both 5-3 scores, a little tense at the end in both cases, but the Brewers get it done, and pounding the ball off the catwalk with regularity are the Milwaukee Brewers in securing some home runs in that series.
I got a little bit of news out of the clubhouse after the game on Sunday from pitching coach Chris Hook. Freddy Peralta threw off a mound for the first time on Friday down in Excellent. Arizona, and sounded like it went well. So that's a big first step for him in his return back to the starting rotation with the Brewers. Obviously, that's still going to be a ways down the line yet, but that first mound session is always real big, I think, for a pitcher's confidence, especially. Because you know you're off the flat ground now, you're on a mound, which means the intensity starts to ramp up. And now if he's able to bounce back after a few days and do another one, then you know you're starting to talk about stringing some consecutive sessions together. And as the shoulder continues to strengthen and you make that next move down the line, then maybe you start talking about minor league rehab at that point. So still too early to guess when exactly he'd be back, but a good sign for sure for a guy that I think is going to be very important for the Brewers down the home stretch.
All right, you mentioned the Burns sprint earlier. I'll close with that one. Corbin Burns catches a pop fly the second inning. The Brewers are already up 7-0 at this point against Pittsburgh. Flies into the dugout. No indication what's going on. He goes down into the tunnel. A lot of people speculated he just had to go. And when you got to go, you got to go. He said afterwards, though, to you, that wasn't the case. That it was more of a playful sort of celebration. The fact that he was able to catch a pop up as the pitcher caught one in the dirt, in Omar's dirt. He said right around the home plate area. The catcher Omar Narváez got a little turned around, so Burns made the play. Apparently, they put a pop up that Hobie Milner caught earlier this year in Washington into a case and gave it to him because I guess it's just pitchers crave this sort of thing, being able to make a play on a pop-up. Very humorous. I love the conversation you had with Corbin Burns afterwards. He's a Corbin, I think you would agree, pretty serious guy. Like, you know, not like overly so, but just, you know, he takes things very seriously. He's very professional, and he's saying all this stuff very deadpan. But it was very funny. Like, you could tell there was a little half smile there as he's saying it, how ridiculous it all is. So a very funny moment from that game.
My final takeaway is the most important one, or my final three up, three down, whatever you want to call it. No rain in Pittsburgh for 4 days.
Love it.
There was, I
Cue
mean, there
the
actually,
blind melon.
let me clarify that. There was rain Friday night. The skies opened up, but it was probably an hour after the game, 45 minutes after the game, so it stormed here pretty good. But that makes me 7 games here in Pittsburgh so far this season and no rain delays, which is absolutely incredible. Anybody that's followed us on Twitter and, you know, listened to our podcast and everything, it's just kind of become a running joke because this is like seriously the rainiest city in America. And to get through this many games so far with no rain is remarkable. So good luck to Kurt Hoag and his venture here next month, about a month from now, right at the trade deadline, actually. So we'll see if we can make it a full 2022 season without having any type of delays because of weather here in the beautiful city of Three Rivers City.
Yes, the Brewers fortunately are coming home. They'll have a roof if they need it. Chicago for three, a day off Thursday, and then Pittsburgh for three before returning back to the road. Another trip to Chicago, I think, followed by San Francisco right before the All-Star game, and that'll do it. That'll do it for the first half. Even though officially we are halfway through the season now, past the halfway point. So the Brewers are sitting pretty, still in first place. We don't know as we record this if they are one game up or 2 games up. It's the contingent on the Cardinals Phillies on Sunday night. But the Brewers will be in first place as we head into the 4th of July. All right, let's go back in time a little bit. It's Remember When. Todd, this will be a short one because I can't find the info I want on this. This is related to the Corbin Burns sprint off the field. I don't know if you remember this. I don't know if our listeners maybe remember this, but in 2000, I'm pretty sure 2003, there was a relief pitcher by the name of Jason DeRosier. And Jason DeRosier called time. He's in the middle of a game. I think it was in June of 03. There's a couple possible appearances, one against the Red Sox, one against the Marlins, where this could have happened. And he called time, ran off the field, into the dugout, into the tunnel. Nobody knows what happened. There was a delay on the field. I can remember the organ music playing while we sort of just stood around wondering what in the world happened. Of course, again, everyone assumed that he just had to go to the bathroom in the middle of an inning, and there was nothing they could do about it. I think we found out later, but again, I cannot find details on this. Like, no one reported this, so I don't know for sure. I believe we found out later that his cup broke, his athletic supporter broke, and he needed to replace it or do something with it. I don't remember like this very very specific details. Fortunately, probably, but it just called that. That's what jumped to mind when Corbin Burns ran off the field like that. Different circumstances and no hold up to the game, obviously. Do you remember this at all? Does this ring any sort of bell?
Zero. I have no
Zero.
recollection of that whatsoever.
Man, it has gotten to the point where I'm doing my internet research wondering, misremember this? And I know I did not. I know I was there, and I know this happened, but and I know it was Jason DeRocher, who is a guy who only played in 45 games. That's a pretty specific memory. But I could not find anybody talking about it, or if they had caught up with him or whatnot, or it's been purged from the internet archives if it's out there. So if any listener remembers that or has some sort of info on that, please, by all means, pass that along. And then real quick, sort of tangentially related, I was looking up big catches in Brewers history after Jonathan Davis, and I was looking up great moments in interleague play, because the Brewers, after this year, I would say interleague play is a little different, where, you know, it still exists, but you're going to be playing every team in the American League at least once, one series per year. So I would say it's going to be a little bit less novel than it is now. It's not really super novel now, but it'll be even less so next year. So I was looking at just some of the bigger moments, and there's another catch that you can't find really video of anywhere, but it was against the New York Yankees, who the Brewers will be playing later this year, 2005, where Jeff Jenkins made a diving catch to end the game. I vividly remember this. He's in the right field line. He makes a dive toward the line. It's Derek Jeter. It's a 4-3 game, and Derek Jeter is up, and the tying run is in scoring position, and Jeff Jenkins makes the catch, ends the game. Pretty remarkable stuff. I remember it was a big deal. The Yankees were in town. The Brewers were just okay, but the Yankees, you know, big-time franchise in town, and a Derek Jeter, the last man up, and the Brewers are able to snuff that out, get the win. Derek Turnbow gets the save, and then the next night, Derek Jeter is again up as a potential, with the potential tying run on third in a 2-1 game, and he grounds back to Turnbow for the game-ending groundout. So the Brewers did take 2 of 3 against the Yankees in that series. It was a pretty uplifting moment, as uplifting moments go, in 2005 for the Milwaukee Brewers franchise. Hey, they finished 500, so that was a good year for them. But just a couple unrelated thoughts that I had as we look back at this week here. All right, let's close things down with the final segment here. It's Todd's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it for a center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun! He just hit a walk-off home!
Well, I'll go with let's look ahead. We got a couple weeks here, but let's take a look at what the All-Star game might hold for the Brewers. And I think it'll be a pitching-dominated pitching solo group of pitchers going for the Brewers. Corbin Burns most certainly deserves a nod. I think Josh Hader, that's a no-brainer as well. And Devin Williams, I think, certainly has made a case to be included in that group as well. You know, his numbers have been phenomenal in his last 21 appearances. He's leading the majors in holds. His ERA is down in the low twos now. Strikeouts are getting to be ridiculous again. So I think that trio is pretty much a lock. It's interesting when you look around the diamond at position players. There's really no candidates that you could make any sort of case for at all. It's just, again, with all the injuries, the fact that the offense is not really impressed this season, to be 11 games over 500 and in first place in a division, granted a division that's down, is still pretty impressive. So, repeat for Hader and Burns as All-Stars, and what could be the first appearance for Devin Williams.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's really cut and dry this year. I was thinking about that today. Like, I don't think there's going to be any mystery who's going to be in the All-Star game. Rowdy is having a good year, but there's a lot of great offensive first basemen in the National League. I don't think that's going to happen, of course. And I think the only drama is whether or not Williams makes it as a setup man. I mean, Hader and Burns, I feel like, are locks. I mean, Hader's looked a little bit not as dominant in the last couple outings, but, like, come on, he's going to be in the All-Star game, and Corbin Burns as well. So it's just a matter of whether they make room for a setup guy. And Devin would be probably one of the top choices in that department. He's been lethal. So, it's going to be not a lot of drama this year. I don't think there are going to be any surprises, like Omar Narvaez sneaking in as an injury replacement. I don't think we're even going to see one of those. It'll be pretty boring this year, but hopefully Brewers fans will get to see those guys work. All right, Todd, that's going to do it for us today. I've got my interview now with Hunter Renfroe. Yeah, he's on the injured list, but he is he sat down with me before we knew that he was going on the injured list. Talked about a lot of topics: his great arm, his walk-off home run against the Brewers against Oliver Drake in 2017. He's had a couple cool moments in his career, including a homer in the World Series, that game that Brett Phillips ended with a walk-off hit when he was playing with the Tampa Bay Rays. We talked about all that, so enjoy this interview, Todd. Meanwhile, I will let you go. Thanks for joining me, man.
JR, it's always a pleasure.
I appreciate that, Todd. And here's my interview with Hunter Renfroe. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll chat with you again soon. Bye-bye.
My guest is Hunter Renfro, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. And Hunter, I'll go back to your college days to start with. You were teammates with Brandon Woodruff. So I got to know if you have any Woodruff stories, or if maybe he has any stories of you. Might be a better question to ask.
Yeah, he definitely probably has more stories of me than I do of him. Our college days was a little bit more of me playing, and he was kind of injured during my time, especially our junior year when we went to the World Series. He got injured about halfway through, I guess it was, and if we'd had him during the World Series, it would have been pretty much over with, but he got hurt, but obviously his career thus far has been incredible, so he knows what he's doing, and it's been fun to play with him thus far.
The thing that I think a lot of people know about you is your cannon right arm. When you were with the Red Sox, you had a walk-off outfield assist. So I'm curious if you prefer that to a walk-off home run. You've had one of those against the Milwaukee Brewers, actually, among the two in your career. So which is the more satisfying?
I don't know. Probably the walk-off homer is just special, obviously. Every kid grows up, wanting to be in the situation, the bottom of the ninth, bases loaded or, whatever, and hit the walk-off home run. And so that's kind of special. But it's pretty cool to have a walk-off, outfield assist, especially in that game with the Rays there. The importance of the game and being the standings of that thus far at that point, it was pretty special. So I think it was pretty cool to be able to do that, and I guess my old team.
Cool. I was gonna have because obviously you're with the Rays in 2020, so this is the next year.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Do you remember the home run against the Brewers, the walk off?
I do. It was off Ollie, and obviously I played with Oliver in 2020. So
you played with everyone.
Yeah, I played with a lot of guys, man, and it was fun. Obviously Oliver was an incredible guy and great pitcher, but is at that point I think it was 2017
or 18. I think so. Yeah, no, it was 17.
And he just threw a bunch of splitters. I know he threw a splitter as his pitch. And he threw me one I could hit and was able to get it out of there. So
I want to ask you about 2020 with the Rays, because you homer in the World Series, which is cool. A lot of Brewers fans remember Brett Phillips from his time.
Absolutely.
Here. He has the walk-off hit in that one. You're one of the first guys to get to him, Adonis, too. So so that game, I have to think, is one of the more memorable ones in your ledger so far.
Yeah, no question. I think anytime you get to go to the World Series is special. I say not a lot of people that play in the big leagues even get to go to the World Series, let alone get a hit or a home run or anything like that. So it's pretty special to even go to one. And obviously the time with the Rays was short due to the COVID stuff. And it wasn't necessarily my best season by no means, but short sample size there. But the guys there, we had a great time. We had a great group of guys there and an incredible pitching staff. And just like kind of built a lot like this team is, really. Good defense, great pitching, and timely hitting, and I think that's kind of what we did there is, we didn't win a whole lot of 10-2 ball games. We won a lot of 3-2, 4-1, low scoring games, and that got us all the way to where we needed to be in the World Series. So I think that's pretty special. But like I said, I love the time there. Obviously, I had a lot of big hits and special hits in the World Series and in the playoffs. And as my first taste of the playoffs, so it was fun to be able to do that.
I know this pandemic probably makes this difficult too, but four teams in 4 years, is it hard to just get comfortable, get a footing? You keep moving, you keep getting moved around.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Obviously, the guys are the guys. If you're a baseball player, you interact with baseball players well.
Sure.
You always get along with guys like that, especially guys you've played with in the past and stuff. So I think the hardest part is, your relationships with the training staff, the coaches, the clubhouse people. You get relationships with those guys, and then all of a sudden you leave. You're like, well, we got to start all over again, basically. And my time with the Padres, I spent the most time with those guys, and I still have good relationships with those guys every time I go over there and see them. So I think that's kind of like the biggest thing is, like, you lose your camaraderie with everybody in the organizations. That's kind of
thing. Yeah, and then you get traded here seconds before the lockout.
Yeah.
Were you able to at least reach out to, like, Adonis, had you been your teammate, or were you able to reach out to people before that, that all took effect?
I reached out to a few people. Woody, Jace. But other than that, like, it was basically like I was asleep, I was asleep in the bed, and we'd already been, got through our thing where they were going to be, they were tendering us and stuff like that. So, like, I expect to be a Red Sox, you know. I didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm asleep. It's like 10:30 at night, and I keep getting a phone call. I look over, my phones keep lighting up, and it's my agent calling me. I have a deal on my phone where, like, I don't let – if a new number calls me, like, it goes straight to, you know, voicemail. Sure, like, you don't even answer it. And so my agent calls me and says, hey, you know, they're trying to get in touch with you, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, for what? Like, there are two reasons they're calling me. Like, either I'm getting DFA or like, getting traded or getting extension. You know, there's only two reasons. You know? And I'm like, all right, well, what is it? He's like, he told me I couldn't tell you. So, and you know, I'll call him back, and he basically told me I was being traded, and that you know, he really appreciated my time and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, at that point, I'm like, all right, well, where am I getting traded? You know?
Yeah.
And he said Milwaukee. And I'm like, well. There's definitely worse place to be, you know. Sure. This is kind of where I wanted to be anyway. So I was kind of very thankful for my time with the Red Sox and, you know, what they meant to me and what I learned from those guys over there was detrimental to my my success there. And so
yeah.
I'm very thankful for that.
How, going back to the arm you have, is that something that comes naturally? Is that something you emphasized as you were coming up through youth baseball? Or just how does somebody get to that point?
You know, I don't really have an answer to that. Unfortunately, you know, my dad, you know, when he played baseball, he always had a good arm. He was always a really good baseball player. My grandfather was always a good baseball player. So I think maybe more than anything is kind of genetics. You know, when I grew up, I always had one of the best arms on the team. Didn't never really pitch, you know, necessarily, but I always had the best arm on the team.
Sure.
For that matter, I was always a catcher outfielder, and got a chance to pitch when I was younger a little bit. Didn't really have any clue how to pitch. I just go up there and throw it as hard as I could and sure. Hope it went toward the strike zone. And as I grow and kept growing older and older, you know, just arm strength kept coming. And you know, by the time probably my sophomore year in high school, it was up to, you know, low 90s, mid 90s.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we're gonna figure out how to pitch a little bit, you know, like we're going to use this.
Yeah, of course.
And started closing a little bit around sophomore year, and the arm strength just kind of kept going. And obviously I got drafted out of high school, went to Mississippi State and was pitching there, and I mean, like I said, I always really had it. You know, it's nothing I really had to work on too hard. You know, I never really was the guy that had to go to drive line or something like that to pump up the, you know, miles per hour. I always use my body well, always use my arm well, and always try to take care of it the best I could. And whether it be like long tossing or making sure I do my, you know, pregame work with the fans and stuff like that, that's what I did.
Yeah, I don't even know this. Have you pitched in a big league game? Have you had a chance?
No, they won't let me.
They won't let you. No. Too bad. Maybe you can get up there.
I will eventually pitch. And I just want to get one strikeout in my career.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure the guy, whoever I strike out, signs the bat and sends it over. So, but yeah, I want one inning. I want to try to get one strikeout. Yeah. But yeah.
All right, last question. I know you were nominated for Roberto Clemente Man of the Year for some of your work with the military. I think that was in San Diego.
So yeah, San Diego. Multiple times.
Do you still do that stuff? Like, what is your involvement with that stuff now?
It's just been tough with the COVID stuff. You know, we still keep in touch with a lot of the guys in San Diego, military-wise, you know, the Green Beret Foundation and stuff like that. And then my buddy, Travis Wilson, he does Alpha Elite Performance, which is like a performance-based protein and, you know, stuff like that, and he does an incredible job with all the former military people and Green Beret stuff. And I'm on the board of, you know, what we do is we get all these old veteran military guys and take them on trips, like as far as like going to, I think they just went on one to like Cancun or something like that in Mexico, and they went all deep sea fishing and catching like blue marlin and stuff. So cool. We were able to send them there and watch them put them up in like basically a 5-star resort and go out there and catch blue marlin and stuff like that. So it was incredible, and I hope that's what we do. The next thing possibly is send them to Africa and go up there and help tag, you know, different animals and for research and stuff. So it's really good for those guys to get out in the outdoors and stuff like that. So that's kind of what we do.
All right, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.